Okay, let's unpack this. We are living in just this fire hose of information, right? And the second we need answers, we start looking for guides, for people who know, experts. But here's the universal challenge. How do you really identify one? I mean, everyone seems to have an opinion, maybe a YouTube channel. How do you know? For most of us, I think we default to the simplest thing. An expert is, someone who sounds confident, seems to know more than we do. But our sources today, they're quick to point out that relying just on perception, well, that's the wide open door for BS artists and bluffers. They just need to look the part. So our mission today, we're diving into some sources that give us a pretty rock solid practical way to check expertise, something that goes way beyond just social proof. We're drawing on ideas from risk management and, this is crucial, the tough vetting standards from the legal world.
Yeah. And what's fascinating really is how the definition we use for expert basically determines if we end up trusting someone genuine or an imposter. This isn't just about being skeptical for the sake of it. It's about building a solid critical thinking framework. If our standard for accepting someone's expertise doesn't really allow for a factual challenge, then, well, we're basically setting ourselves up to be swayed just by confidence.
And that's exactly where it starts to go wrong, isn't it? The simple truth, the human default, is often just someone who seems to know more than you. Relying on those outward signs, smooth talker, expensive suit, maybe a strong referral from a friend, it's just a shaky foundation for any serious decision. We need something more verifiable,
Yeah.
something that judges credentials, not just delivery.
Absolutely. I mean, think about when the stakes are really high, like in a courtroom. You can't just rely on a handshake or, a fancy resume. The legal system gives us a much stronger, verifiable standard. To be an expert witness, that person has to possess, and this is the key list, relevant knowledge, skills, training, education, and root experience beyond that of the normal person in the area of their testimony.
That list, knowledge, skills, training, education, experience. Yeah, that sounds like the whole ball game right there.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through why that framework, beyond just being a list, is so much better than just relying on a reference?
Well, the power isn't just in the words, the list itself. It's the mechanism that enforces it. That definition, it makes general sense, sure.
Yeah.
But the really critical point is that it allows facts to be brought to bear on whether they're accepted. The court mechanism forces accountability. Think about it. If someone claims to be an expert and lies about their degrees or publications or where they worked,
They can actually get in trouble for it.
yes, they risk prosecution for perjury. Lying under oath has serious consequences.
So the system works because the other side, the opposing counsel, has the right, maybe even the job, to challenge those claims of expertise.
Precisely.
It's like there's an institutionalized skeptic built right in, forcing everyone to be rigorous.
Exactly. The system basically assumes doubt until expertise is proven. It forces the person claiming it to show, with documents, maybe witnesses, that their knowledge is real, not just something they cooked up. And that rigor, it's absolutely necessary when someone's testimony could lead to huge financial losses or even affect someone's freedom.
Okay, I think we can agree then. That framework, verifiable knowledge, skills, training, education, experience, all open to factual challenge that seems way too valuable to just keep locked up inside courtrooms.
Oh, absolutely. It really should be standard operating procedure for any serious business decision, I think. When you think about relying on someone's specialized knowledge, could be for hiring someone or for consulting. Heck, even sometimes the clerk in a store giving advice that legal standard, or at least the spirit of it, should be applied reasonably, of course.
But the scale of checking has to change depending on the situation, right? Like if I'm hiring a teenager to mow my lawn, I'm probably not running background checks and verifying their, I don't know, lawnmower training certificate. So
No.
how does risk management fit in here? How do we scale it?
Yeah, and that's where the concept actually scales really well. The core idea from risk management here is pretty simple. The level of certainty you need or desire dictates exactly how deep you need to dig. Your due diligence should be proportional to the potential cost if things go wrong.
Okay, so more risk means more checking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For example, vet an electrician for a simple house repair. The risk is, let's say, medium. You might check their state license, maybe call a couple references. That's probably enough.
Right.
But if you're hiring a structural engineer to consult on a, I don't know, a 50-story skyscraper, failure there is catastrophic. So you absolutely must demand the highest level of verification. That means reviewing every single publication they claim, maybe having your own internal engineering team audit their past projects rigorously, checking their university transcripts. The works.
Catastrophic risk demands exhaustive proof. Got it. That makes the process really actionable. It takes that legal idea and turns it into, well, the sources basically outline three practical steps for vetting someone. Can you detail those for us?
Sure. It's kind of a blueprint for due diligence. Step one, get the claims. Simple enough, right? Ask them.
Okay.
What exactly do you say you know or have done? And be specific. Don't just accept, I know about software. You need something like, I designed the database schema for company X using PostgreSQL, and I did that for 4 years. Specifics.
Yeah. Okay, get the specific claims, then what?
Step two, compare those claims to the facts. This is the verification part. Can you actually find those publications they mentioned? Does company X confirm they worked there with that title during those dates? Do their degrees match what they claim?
Just checking the story.
You're checking the story against reality. And then finally, step three, trust based only on the verified factors. You basically discard the confidence, the smooth talk, the unsupported claims, and you build your trust only on the solid facts you were able to confirm.
That system, I mean, it sounds like it should just be the default way of doing things. Yet the sources point out most people, most businesses even, rely almost entirely on social proof. You know, that common flaw, getting a referral from a friend or a colleague and just calling it a day.
It's definitely the path of least resistance. That referral is sometimes called the old boys network, right? Yeah, the source author even admits that's how they get most of their consulting gigs.
Oh, really? Even they rely on it?
They get work that way, yes. But they're very clear. While referrals are common, they are absolutely not the best approach if the issue you're dealing with is truly important. Social proof is easy, it's fast, it feels comfortable, but it provides almost zero factual rigor.
So the big takeaway here is we really have to train ourselves, maybe discipline ourselves, mm-hmm. to demand the documentation, the verifiability over just, you know, perceived charisma or a warm referral from someone we trust.
Precisely.
No.
We need to be able to demonstrate why we chose that expert based on facts, not just who happened to recommend them.
Okay. Now here's where it gets, I think, really interesting. We've talked about the external bluffer, the person who truly lacks the credentials, the real imposter. But what if the person has all the paperwork? They pass the background checks, everything seems legit.
Yeah.
But internally, they're wrestling with profound self-doubt. That brings us to section three, right? The difference between an actual fraud and a legitimate expert who might be struggling with imposter syndrome.
Yes. Imposter syndrome is such a critical factor when we talk about high-level expertise. It's that feeling, that experience where really competent, highly skilled experts genuinely believe they don't know enough. Or maybe that they're stretching beyond their actual expertise. They live with this fear of being found out, exposed as a fraud.
And the sources seem to link this self-doubt, maybe counterintuitively, to a desire for perfection. Is that right? Like, real experts hold themselves to such a high standard that they often feel like they're operating right at or even past the edge of what they strictly know. What's the result of that internal conflict?
Well, that conflict often shows up in a really crucial defining way. The true expert will often express uncertainty. They might tell a client, look, I'm not 100% certain about this part of the result. Or they might admit they're using a degree of, you know, intuition or educated guesswork for a small piece of the puzzle. They doubt themselves internally precisely because they understand the complexity. They see the potential pitfalls and failure points.
But why do they feel that way? If they're genuinely world-class in their field, shouldn't they be the most confident people in the room?
It seems like it should work that way. But we have to look at the nature of high-level work itself. Think about the opposite for a second. A task that's just done day after day in the same way with the same mechanisms, routine processes.
Like assembly line work or data entry.
Exactly. Those are the tasks that are most easily automated, right? They require minimal critical thought. The results are predictable. That's not expertise in the sense we're discussing.
Right. That's a process operator, maybe not a deep expert.
Precisely. Anything that truly requires an expert. Something new, something with unique challenges, something tricky. It requires that we go beyond what we strictly know into the realm of the uncertain. If you are a high-level specialist, you are essentially paid to solve the problem that hasn't quite been solved exactly like this before.
Okay. So true expertise inherently involves navigating some level of the unknown. It's part of the job description.
It absolutely is. And the source author shares this really powerful personal angle on it. They describe themselves as a highly accomplished consultant and advisor. Yet they admit, quote, they feel as if I am an imposter from time to time.
Wow, that's fascinating. Why would someone at that level, an acknowledged master, feel like an imposter?
Because they realize they're almost always doing something at least a bit different from what they have ever done before.
Mm.
Even if they're operating in a familiar field, the specific application might be novel. Imagine being a world-class architect, right? But the client wants to use some new building material that's never been tested quite like this in this specific climate. You know, 90% of the solution's stone cold, but that last 10%, it involves some high-stakes extrapolation, informed guesswork based on deep knowledge, sure, but still guesswork.
Sure.
And that 10% is where the self-doubt kicks in, even though navigating that uncertainty is precisely why they were hired in the first place.
That completely reframes it. It makes self-doubt sound less like a weakness and maybe more like an indicator that they're actually wrestling with a genuinely challenging, unique problem instead of just phoning it in or running a pre-cooked script.
Yes. It's the expert acknowledging the real limits of current knowledge when faced with something novel. Bluffers. They rarely admit limits. True experts, they're often acutely aware of them.
Okay, so if the true expert is sort of designed to doubt themselves sometimes because of the nature of the work, what's the best way to manage that doubt, both for them and maybe for the client hiring them?
Yeah, the optimal solution isn't just, you know, positive self-talk or something. It's more about structural rigor. The best countermeasure mentioned is when experts engage other experts to check on themselves and their results. Peer review, essentially.
Like a second opinion.
Exactly. It takes that internal anxiety, that uncertainty, and it formalizes it into a process. This gives the expert themselves confirmation that their intuition or their novel approach is sound. And critically, it provides the client with independent verification. It basically turns self-doubt into formalized, validated confidence.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what does this all mean for us, you know, the people out there looking for expertise? If you're searching for an expert for something important, you really need a way to determine if they meet your specific verifiable needs. Don't just go on gut feel. The method the legal system uses, checking that list, relevant knowledge, skills, training, education, experience against actual verifiable facts, that seems like a much better, much more rigorous path than just relying on easy referrals or how confident someone sounds.
Mm-hmm.
We need to kind of stop rewarding just the performance of confidence and start demanding actual proof.
And maybe connecting this to the bigger picture. Just remember that the act of being a true expert often means living, working, existing in that realm of the uncertain. Quote, real expertise usually involves pushing boundaries, confronting messy details, dealing with novelty. So here's a final thought, maybe something for you, the listener, to mull over. If someone you encounter claims 100% certainty all the time, never admits doubt, presents every complex answer as absolutely flawless and final, does that automatically mean they're a true master who's gone incredibly deep into a challenging field?
Yeah.
Or could it raise a question about whether they're maybe just running a well-rehearsed script or perhaps avoiding the truly thorny, unique problems that demand genuine, boundary-pushing expertise? The next time you hear that definitive, absolute answer to a complex question, maybe you just pause and consider whether that speaker has truly wrestled with the limits of their own knowledge.